Hey everyone, and welcome back for another deep dive. This time, we're tackling a topic that's been on my mind a lot lately: India's cities. They're growing at an incredible pace, but can they actually build the infrastructure to support all these new people? And what about all this talk about smart cities? Is that just a buzzword, or is something really transformative happening there? And the really cool thing about this deep dive is we're not just looking at, you know, the usual stuff. We've got history books, we've got economic analyses, we've even got architectural studies. Should be interesting.
Yeah, it's really remarkable when you think about the scale of urbanization that's happening in India. It's almost like watching a time-lapse video of a city exploding in size, you know?
It's mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, India has always had these incredible cities, right? The ancient Indus Valley civilization, the Mughal era, with all that grandeur.
Yeah.
But nothing compares to the sheer number of people moving to cities now. It's like all that was just practice for what's happening today.
Absolutely. And you can really see that shift in the numbers. Around 2011, India's population growth went from, you know, a relatively stable period to this period of really rapid growth. And that kind of growth puts immense pressure on everything. It's not just about building more houses. It's about creating whole systems that can actually function for millions and millions of people.
Right. So it's about more than just like bricks and mortar. It's about those systems that make a city actually livable.
Exactly. I mean, think about things like having clean water, a good sanitation system, reliable electricity. And then there's transportation, making sure it actually works and keeping everyone safe. These are all things that you have to scale up massively when you have millions of new people coming in all the time.
You know, one of the sources we've got here, Geography of India, talks about the Kosi River, which they call the sorrow of Bihar because of its really bad floods. It just really hit me as this powerful example of how nature kind of throws a wrench into all of this, you know?
Yeah, the Kosi River is fascinating because it's what we call an antecedent river, which basically means it existed before the Himalayas were formed. So as those mountains were rising up, the Kosi actually carved its way through them, which created this really steep gradient. And what that means is it carries a huge amount of sediment, which makes it really, really prone to flooding.
And to make matters even worse, the Kosi has actually shifted its course by over 100 kilometers in recent times.
Yeah.
Can you imagine that? Like, think about the impact that has on everything, from where people live to how they farm.
It's a perfect example of how the environment, you know, these forces of nature, they intersect with these challenges of growing cities. You can't just ignore the environment when you're building for millions of people.
You know, it's like a reality check. You can have the most impressive buildings, the coolest technology, but if you don't take into account something like a river that decides to move, you're in for a world of trouble.
Absolutely. And this is where this whole concept of smart cities comes in. It's all about using technology, data to try to make cities more efficient, make them more resilient, and hopefully more livable in the face of all these challenges.
Okay, so for our listeners who might not be totally familiar with smart cities, could you give us like the quick elevator pitch? What are we talking about here?
Sure. Imagine a city where, like, everything is interconnected. You've got sensors everywhere, data analysis happening in real time, and digital networks connecting it all. This allows for things like optimizing traffic flow so you don't have those massive traffic jams. You can manage waste more efficiently, even create smarter energy grids.
It sounds so futuristic, like something out of a sci-fi movie.
Okay, go ahead.
But I'm guessing there are, you know, some potential downsides too, right? It can't all be sunshine and roses.
Of course, there are definitely concerns. I mean, there are always questions about privacy when you have all that data being collected. Who controls it? And then will all these cool benefits actually reach everyone? Or will it just end up making the gap between the rich and the poor even bigger? If it's not done carefully, smart cities could end up creating more problems than they solve.
Yeah, it's like that old saying, right? Technology is just a tool. You can use it for good things or you can use it for bad things. And when you're talking about a country like India, with its massive population and so many different challenges, it's really important to keep that in mind.
I completely agree. We can't just assume that technology is going to be a magic solution. We have to be critical, understand its limitations, and really make sure that it's being used in a way that benefits everyone, not just a select few.
You know, this reminds me of something we talked about in a previous episode when we were discussing the decline of those southern kingdoms in India, like way back around 1200 to 1500 CE. They had their own problems, right?
Mm-hmm.
Internal weaknesses, pressure from outside forces, and they just weren't able to adapt.
That's a great point. It just goes to show that history is full of cautionary tales. And for India today, the question is, can they avoid making the same mistakes? Can they build a future where their cities are not just big, but sustainable, fair, and truly good places to live?
So we've got this huge urban explosion happening in India, the challenges of building the infrastructure to keep up, and this whole smart city movement with its amazing potential, but also those potential dangers. Where do we go from here?
I think the key is to understand that it's all connected. You know, we can't just look at technology by itself or infrastructure by itself. We have to understand the history, the social dynamics, the environmental pressures. It's all part of the same puzzle.
So we need that big picture thinking, that holistic approach.
Exactly. And I think for our listeners today, the key takeaway is this. As you dig deeper into this topic, don't just get caught up in the shiny new tech or the fancy buildings. Think about the people, think about the systems, think about the history and how it all fits together.
That's great advice. And I think that's a perfect place to wrap up part one of our deep dive. We'll be back soon to explore more of this fascinating topic, so stay tuned.
Welcome back to our deep dive into India's urban future. Before we jump back into the present, I think it's worth taking a quick detour back into history, you know? India's past is full of fascinating examples of how different societies have dealt with these kinds of challenges, growth, change, all that. And there's some really interesting parallels to what's happening today.
Yeah, I love those history repeats itself moments.
Yeah.
So what part of history are we talking about here?
Well, one example that really stands out to me is something called the permanent settlement, which was put in place in Bengal back in the late 1700s during British rule.
Okay, so I'm guessing the permanent settlement wasn't about people literally settling down in one place forever. What was it actually about?
You got it. It was all about land revenue. Basically, the British East India Company wanted to create a system for collecting taxes from the land, something that was, you know, predictable and stable. So their idea was to fix the amount of revenue that landowners, they were called zamindars, had to pay and make it, well, permanent.
Ah, so they were trying to simplify things. I have a feeling it wasn't quite that simple, though. What happened?
Well, as you can imagine, when you fix the revenue demand without taking into account things like how productive the land is or, you know, changes in the market, it can lead to some unexpected consequences. And that's exactly what happened. For one thing, it created this whole new class of landed gentry, these zamindars, who were now officially recognized as the owners of the land. Their power and influence grew like crazy.
Wow. So a policy that was supposed to benefit the British ended up giving a huge boost to a local elite. Talk about unintended consequences.
Exactly. And this shift in power had a ripple effect on the entire social structure of Bengal. You know, the people who were actually working the land, the peasantry, they found themselves in a much more vulnerable position. They were now basically tenants on land that belonged to these really powerful zamindars.
It's like a domino effect, right?
Yeah.
One change leads to another.
Right.
And before you know it, you have a whole new social hierarchy.
Exactly. And I think it's a powerful reminder that anytime you make a big change in a complex system, whether it's a land revenue policy in the 1700s or a smart city initiative in the 21st century, there are going to be consequences that you might not even be able to predict. You have to be really careful.
So how does this historical example connect to the challenges that India's cities are facing today?
I think the main takeaway is that development isn't just about building stuff, you know, bricks and mortar or even just technology. It's about people. It's about power dynamics. And it's about making sure that progress doesn't leave anyone behind.
Yeah, like we were saying before, infrastructure isn't just about the physical stuff. It's about creating spaces where people can actually thrive, where they can live good lives. And to do that, you have to understand the history, the social context, all of it.
Couldn't have said it better myself. And speaking of understanding context, let's shift gears for a bit and talk about another challenge that's really unique to India, the Kosi River. You mentioned it earlier, and it's just this incredible example of how nature can really throw a wrench into even the best laid plans.
Yeah, that nickname, the Sorrow of Bihar, really says it all. It's like a reminder that we can't just focus on building cities. We have to figure out how to work with the environment, not against it.
Absolutely. The Kosi River, with its steep gradient and all that sediment it carries, it's been prone to flooding for centuries, you know. But as the population in the Kosi Basin has exploded, those floods have become even more devastating. Just imagine the impact.
One of the sources we read mentioned that the Kosi has actually shifted its course by over 100 kilometers. It's hard to even wrap your head around that. I mean, entire villages, towns, even cities potentially wiped out or completely changed by that kind of shift.
It's mind-blowing. And it really highlights the need for a different approach to development, one that takes into account the long-term environmental impact and makes sure that communities are actually resilient in the face of these kinds of changes.
So what's being done to try to manage these challenges? I mean, can you even control a river like the Kosi?
Well, people have tried. There have been a lot of attempts to control its flow using things like embankments and other engineering solutions. But, you know, it's like trying to put a Band-Aid on a much bigger problem.
Yeah.
And often those solutions just create new problems somewhere else down the line. They can disrupt the natural flow of the river, which can actually make flooding worse in other areas.
It sounds like you really have to strike a balance, right? Trying to harness the power of nature while also respecting its limits. It's a tough one.
It definitely is. And it reminds me that sometimes the best solutions are the ones that work with nature, not against it. There's a lot we can learn from traditional practices, you know? Things like flood recession agriculture, building houses on stilts. These are techniques that people in the region have been using for generations to adapt to the Kosi's, well, unpredictable nature.
So it's about blending that traditional wisdom with modern technology and a deep understanding of the environment.
Exactly. And that brings us back to the idea of smart cities. It's not just about, you know, throwing the latest gadgets at a problem. It's about creating systems that actually work for the people and the environment.
This deep dive is really making me think about how interconnected everything is, you know. We started with a historical land revenue policy, then we talked about a powerful river, and now we're back to smart cities. It's all connected.
It really is. And for our listeners, I think that's a really important takeaway. When you're thinking about India's urban future, you can't just look at one piece of the puzzle. You have to consider the history, the environmental challenges, the social impact of development. It's all part of the same story.
This has been fascinating, but I feel like we've only scratched the surface. I mean, we haven't even talked about some of the really specific challenges that India is facing with things like sanitation, transportation, and making sure everyone has access to clean water.
You're absolutely right. Those are crucial aspects of building cities that are truly livable, truly sustainable, and they deserve a much deeper exploration, which is exactly what we'll do in part three.
All right. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've talked about the big picture, the historical context, but now let's get down to the nitty-gritty. What are the actual challenges of making India's cities work, you know, for everyone?
You're so right. We've been looking at the big picture, but now it's time to zoom in on those everyday realities that people in these fast-growing cities are actually facing.
Okay, so let's start with something that seems really basic, but is super important. Sanitation. You know, from our research, it's clear that this is a huge issue in a lot of Indian cities, and it can have a really big impact on people's health.
Absolutely. When we talk about infrastructure, we often think about those big, impressive projects, you know, like bridges and highways. But sanitation is just as important, if not more so, and it often gets overlooked. Things like bad sewage systems, people having to go to the bathroom out in the open, contaminated water sources, these are all things that can lead to diseases spreading, especially in crowded areas.
It's crazy to think that in the 21st century, we're still dealing with these basic human needs. It's like we're talking about smart cities and flying cars, but millions of people still don't have a safe and clean place to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head, and it's not just about building more toilets, you know. It's about changing behavior, changing the culture around sanitation, and making sure that those toilets are actually maintained and kept clean.
It's more like a cultural shift than just a construction project. I'm guessing education is a big part of that too, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Education is key to breaking down those taboos and social norms that, you know, often prevent people from talking about sanitation and changing their practices. It's about giving people the knowledge and understanding they need to make good choices for their health and well-being.
So sanitation is definitely a huge challenge. What about transportation? We talked earlier about how India has gone from bullet carts to BMWs pretty quickly, but getting around in these huge cities with millions of people must be incredibly complicated.
Yeah, transportation is a big piece of the puzzle, for sure. And it's not just about moving people around, you know. It's about making sure the system is efficient, sustainable, and accessible to everyone.
We've all seen those images of traffic jams that go on forever in India. And it's not just frustrating, it's a huge waste of time and resources. And it's terrible for the environment with all those cars spewing out exhaust fumes.
Exactly. It's a problem that needs a multi-pronged approach, you know? We need to think about expanding and improving public transportation so it's more reliable, comfortable, and affordable.
I've heard about some really cool things they're doing in other countries. like those bike sharing programs and dedicated bike lanes. Do you think something like that could work in India?
It's definitely possible. And it's not just about bikes. We need to make it easier and safer for people to walk to, create more pedestrian-friendly streets, and encourage people to see those alternatives to cars as not just healthy choices, but also convenient and fun.
So it's about changing the whole mindset, right? Shifting away from that car-centric culture that's so common in a lot of places.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We need to create cities where people actually feel safe and comfortable walking and biking, where the public transportation is good, and where you don't feel like you absolutely have to own a car to get around.
Okay, so we've talked about sanitation, we've talked about transportation, but there's one more piece of the puzzle that we can't ignore. Clean water. It's the foundation of life. And our research shows that access to clean water is still a big problem in many parts of India.
It's true. Millions of people in India still don't have access to safe drinking water. And that has a direct impact on their health, their education, their entire quality of life.
So what's at the root of this problem? Is it just that there's not enough water? Or is it more about the infrastructure and how the water is distributed?
It's a mix of things, really. India faces challenges with both water scarcity and water pollution. As cities grow and industry expands, it puts a huge strain on existing water resources, and pollution from sewage, industrial waste, and agriculture makes a lot of the water unsafe to drink.
It's a vicious cycle, isn't it?
Yeah.
The more cities grow, the more water people need, but the water that's available is getting dirtier and less reliable.
Exactly. And it's a really complex problem that needs a multi-pronged approach. We need to think about conserving water, harvesting rainwater, treating wastewater, and protecting those existing water sources from pollution. It's a big job.
You know, this is where I think it's so important to look back at history and see how people have dealt with these challenges in the past. Our sources talked about those traditional systems like step wells, tanks, all those interesting irrigation techniques that people have been using for centuries.
I completely agree. We don't always have to start from scratch, you know. There's a lot of wisdom in those traditional practices, and we can find ways to integrate them with modern technology and infrastructure.
It's about finding that balance, right?
Yeah.
Between the old and the new, the high tech and the traditional.
Exactly. And recognizing that there's no one-size-fits-all solution, you know. What works in one city might not work in another. We have to be flexible, adaptable, and willing to learn from our mistakes.
Wow. This whole deep dive has been amazing. We've explored the challenges, the complexities, the potential solutions. What do you think is the most important thing our listeners should take away from this?
I think the biggest takeaway is this. India's cities are at a crossroads. The choices they make now will have a huge impact on the lives of millions of people. It's a story that's still being written, you know, and it's a story that we can all be a part of.
I love that. And that's a perfect note to end on. Thanks for joining us on this incredible journey. We hope you've learned something new, that you've been challenged to think differently, and maybe even inspired to get involved.
And remember, the conversation doesn't stop here. Keep exploring, keep learning, and keep asking questions. The future of our cities depends on it.
That's right. Until next time, keep diving deep.